It is time for the week that was, and joining us in the studio this morning, the independent member for Araluen, Robin Lamley. Good morning.
Good morning, Katie.
Lovely to have you here.
Thank you very much.
The mouth from the south.
Here I am again. See, you can't shut
me
up.
In the flesh.
She told me I'm okay. I'm right to call her. I'll give her that nickname.
You can't offend me, I said.
We've got Matt Cunningham from Sky News. Good morning.
Well, I'd like to start with a complaint this morning, Katie.
What about?
I think it's time that you introduce quotas on the week that was. Because I'm feeling very much outnumbered here.
You sound like Jerry Wood.
Yeah. Well, look, I've spent plenty of Fridays in here and been the only girl on the show, so...
It's all on merit, Matt.
You'll be right.
We don't have gender quotas. That's exactly right, Robin. It's based on your merit. So you're lucky you got a call up, Matt.
What does that say about me, Wolfie?
Natasha Files, it's good to have you back, the Attorney General of the Northern Territory.
It's good to be back, Wolfie. My Fridays, as I said earlier in the week, weren't quite the same. I did on a Friday, even though it was on the other side of the world, have a think of you guys.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, no, we're very happy to have you back. And we are very happy as well that your young fella's doing well. So good to have you back in the studio.
Thank you.
And Leah Finocchiaro, of course, the CLP Deputy Opposition Leader. Good morning.
Good morning and happy Friday, everyone.
I tell you what, by Friday after Parliament sash, I think everyone's, you know, you're a bit tired, but you're always a bit rowdy. And I listened to Question Time yesterday and Kezia was struggling to keep you guys under control.
Yesterday, she was the leader of the opposition quite a few times.
Well, we can maybe talk about that later. But anyway, let's get straight into it.
Talk about it now, Wolfie.
Well, let's get straight into it because there has been a lot happen this week, and we might talk the economy. We know that the 2018-19 Treasurer's Annual Financial Report, it was tabled in Parliament earlier in the week, and it shows the Territory Labor Government delivered a massive infrastructure spend, but also there was a $388 million improvement in the expected deficit. Now, the CLP has said, and certainly Gary Higgins was on the show yesterday and said, well, that is as a result of GST. And he said it was interesting that, that additional money was in there as a result of GST, when it's been the main reason that the Labor Party has said, you know, has been the cause for the budget being in the situation that it's in, or for our economy being the situation that it's in. But look, then we also know, as with these types of reports, the devil is really in the detail. And sometimes it takes a bit of time to get through that detail. I know for me, it's quite difficult before I get on air trying to read an annual report, especially a treasurer's one. But then when you look at the front page of the paper, budget blowouts and ministers, department overheads spend millions of your money is the headline. And there does seem to be a number of departments which have overspent.
Katie, it's really important for Territorians to understand what the TAFA is. In terms of a budget, we set a budget, and this was the budget that was delivered in May 2018, and these are the actuals. So in terms of that budget, obviously finished on the 30th of June, within that time period, for example, Frontline Agency of Health, we did a lot of work around the budget for health and that it needed more money, and that's where you saw an increase of $60 million granted to the health department. Similar in corrections, we had done a lot of work around the need for those frontline agencies to have more resources. So what was delivered this week was the actual budget that was gained to those departments.
What we saw in the TAFA was a government completely out of control with its spending. I mean, we all remember 2 weeks before Christmas last year when government dropped that bombshell of the $35.7 billion debt we were facing. We waited anxiously until April for government to announce its plan. They released the Langerland Review and the Root and Branch Review, which was going to, you know, rein in that wasteful spending and ensure we're on a strong fiscal setting going forward. Of course, the only restraint measure we have seen the government implement is their shameful attack on school principals and police with the public service pay freeze. And then literally we've seen overspends in just about every department. We've seen an overrun in policy changes to the tune of $167 million. And the only good news coming out of the TAFA was thanks to the federal government, who gave us an enormous GST top-up, and of course our strong mining sector by way of royalties. So, no ticks in the box for government this week when it comes to their fiscal restraint.
Robin, I know it's a difficult job. You've been the treasurer before.
Well,
it's not
only
an easy
for five
one.
Minutes. I won't sort of overinflate my time as treasurer. But what I am seeing is this government give every excuse under the sun to spend more money. And there's very little information coming out about the real cuts. I had a briefing from Treasury, the Department of Treasury and Finance, on Monday, and they said that the forward estimates, the net debt has blown out now to $8 billion. So we started with $1.6 billion in 2016. The debt's up to $8 billion in 23-24. So things are just getting worse. And I think literally what Leah said is true. This government has no control over this budget anymore.
It's interesting because there was a lot of noise made about what would happen to department heads.
Yeah, there was. The heads would roll.
Yeah. And it doesn't look like that's going to happen. I've got a few questions about some of the budget
blowouts, if you like. Let's hear them. They're not to me, are they? I'm not very good with money.
No. But I'm intrigued as to whether. I'm intrigued as to whether the operational budget of the Palmerston Hospital stuck to its $24 million or whether we saw a fairly significant blowout in the cost of running that particular organ.
Matt and I are sharing the microphone, so when Matt questions
so this is
me, it's not an awkward pause. In terms of health, we've done a lot of work because it costs an enormous amount to deliver health services right across the territory, and the frontline agencies are police, corrections, and health. We can't simply close the ED when we hit budget. We have to work out how we deliver those services, and we're certainly conscious. The cost of delivering them in the territory is more than elsewhere in Australia, but also conscious of our responsibilities around the budget. I'll have to come back on Matt's question around exactly with the Palmerston Regional Hospital, but with health, we did a lot of work and Cabinet approved an increase to the overall health budget, which is what's reflected in these papers. And the other complication for the health budget is the NDIS in terms of the final figures. But in terms of health, we've done a lot of work to make sure that we stick to those budgets, but also provide care to Territorians.
I mean, in April last year, the government talked up a very big game. Matt, you're right, when it came to heads rolling and we're putting in place all these measures. I mean, the heads that should roll are the Chief Minister and the Deputy Chief Minister, because this really is astonishing. It's unbelievable the way in which they announced this disaster to Territorians in the first place last year, but then to have the Root and Branch review and the Langerland review essentially not being followed by the government, no steps put in place, and that continued wasteful spending. And I think that's what's so insulting and concerning to Territorians. They're seeing, you know, $12 million at the Turf Club, $3 million for the park at Miley, you know, and on and on and on this stuff goes. The $20 million car park next to Parliament House, when the money, if it's going to be spent, should be focused on wealth generating, infrastructure or whatever else it might need to be.
Look, I'm going to say that I actually think a lot of people won't have a huge issue or will realise that in things like health, there might be an overspend, because we know that we have got some serious issues when it comes to health. I'll say the same about frontline service like the police. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's my opinion, that people don't have a huge issue with health and police needing those resources. But then when you look at the Department of Chief Ministers, obviously they blew their $76.3 million budget by $9 million, largely due to the costs of implementing the Boundless Possible master brand. That's what's being reported in the paper. I'm actually not surprised by that, because I remember when there was jobs being advertised for those Boundless Possible positions and thinking, wow, they're actually, when you add all of those up and the ongoing costs of those over what will be a few years, they're going to be expensive, on reoccurring costs, especially at a time when we were meant to have that freeze on jobs being advertised. So I feel as though people know that the hospital needs to be able to run, but they do expect it to be done in a way that's managed sensibly. They do expect that the prison's going to cost quite a bit to run, and of course our police force is going to be expensive, because we're expecting our police to do a hell of a lot more than what we have in previous years, I suppose, with different policies that have been implemented. But then when you talk about the Department of Chief Ministers and some of those other departments having those blowouts, you just think, well, hang on a sec, you know, how are you leading by example?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And Boundless Possible is a very good example of wasteful spending. I mean, that is largely advertising to Territorians. It has no KPIs. I asked a series of questions around this, and there's no tangible benefit that the government seeks from it. They're not measuring how many people visit the Territory because of it. They're not measuring how many people move to the Territory because of it. It's just, you know, we saw the $45,000 rocket being shot up into the air with the branding on the side. We saw the $420,000 ad.
I don't even know what it is. Like, apart from the purple brand. I mean, what is it apart from the branding? I've got no idea. Why does it cost so much?
Well, I don't know whether the operational costs of that also, whether what falls into that is the population strategy and trying to move people into the Northern Territory. I'm not 100% sure.
It's been a big fat flop too, hasn't it?
Well, I guess this is, you know, this is the whole point, I suppose, is that in politics, perception is everything. And if the perception is that money's being wasted on some of those things that aren't really deemed to be necessary for right now, when our budget's in the situation that it's in and when the economy's in the situation that it's in, that's where things are failing a bit.
And Katie, these budget papers, this is the budget that was delivered in May 2018, and what the TAFR is it's the adjustments to those budgets. So it's not just simply, oh, we overspend. It is, we've adjusted our budget doing work during that year. And the Langlan report was handed down in, I think, April. The recommendations were being rolled out. So only 4 months of this TAFR is around Langlan. But that's one of the key points around Langlan report, was that don't make decisions in isolation, because they seem reasonable enough. They need to be made, you know, at that once a year point, and you can't make budget considerations outside of that, because you have to have that whole picture. And so that's certainly, in terms of the agencies that I'm responsible for, is making, you know, we have to be agile. We need to change the budget to respond to need at times, but we need to make that within that whole picture.
But one thing that Langlan was very clear on, he said that the budget needs to be the budget, and that has been the problem for a long time, is that the budget has, it's like some kind of rough guide to how you're going to do things. It's, if you're in private enterprise and you're given, you know, a $100 million budget to run your business for a year, and if you're the CEO and you overspend that by $50 million, well, you get sacked. And the other interesting thing about this is, let's remember that these are the issues that Ken Vowles raised last December, yeah. And Ken Vowles' punishment for raising those issues was to be booted out of the Labor Party caucus. So, I don't know.
And not just Ken, you know, Jeff and Scott McConnell went along with him. So, I mean, I know, Natasha, you speak a lot less these days about chaos and dysfunction, but...
still my favourite words, Leah.
Is it a bit more, you know, reflective of what's going on in the Labor ranks?
I notice they still haven't opened the pre-selection for Ken's seat.
Oh, no, Is there something you want to announce?
Well, Natasha's probably got a good excuse, I think. It's interesting, I think.
The Langlan came around April. I can't remember the exact date. But policy decisions are made constantly in cabinet papers, which is the formal process for that. But there has certainly, in terms of that Langlan recommendation, been strict around when you bring in a policy change, well, what is the economic impact or the budgetary impact on that? And that those decisions can't be made in isolation if they do need to be made. And this is something, you know, that in terms of the health budget, I think it's 8 out of 9 budgets. So it's making sure we're funding agencies to do their job in the first place.
I just feel like there's a bit of irony, though, as well, when you look at, you know, and we did touch on those executive pay freezes and the fact that, you know, we're expecting executives to sign off on this pay freeze. But then if you're talking about governments overspending by millions of dollars, where you go, okay, well, hang on a sec, you know, there just seems to be a bit of, I just find it quite ironic that we're sort of, you know, we're saying heads will roll if they don't rein in their budgets, but then the only way that heads are going to roll by the look of things is if you don't sign your pay freeze.
Exactly right, you know, and that's a profound lack of leadership. I mean, how can the government of the day go after the public service and blame them for, you know, the fiscal situation, which has entirely been driven by the government of the day, who came into power and, like kids in a lolly shop, spent all their pocket money. You know, this is Territorians' money. It's not just grows on trees. And Territorians at the moment, with the state of the books, are paying in the order of, you know, $1 million a day in interest repayments. Now, people expect the little money we have to be spent as wisely and go as far as possible. They want the best, you know, services for police and health and all of those types of areas. But what we've seen is a government unable to prioritise taxpayers' dollar spending, and that's hugely concerning.
Katie, we've been absolutely prioritising taxpayer dollars, conscious that it's not our money, it's Territorians' money. One of the key emphases has been on jobs and capital to keep people here. We need to keep people here. The CLP did not plan for the post-IMPEX construction phase, a huge project, and we needed to be stepped down off that. So a lot of the capital grants have been around jobs to keep people here in the Territory.
Katie, I'm just aware that there's people right throughout, particularly the Darwin area, that aren't sleeping at night, and they haven't been sleeping for weeks and months because their businesses are going broke.
Well, yeah.
And I just wonder, does the government sleep at night? Does the Treasurer sleep at night? Because you shouldn't be sleeping at night. You know, this is a big concern, and I just don't get the impression that this government is at all taking it seriously. And they should be, because, you know, in the context of what's happening in the real world out there, people are losing money, they're going under, their marriages are breaking down, it's having a profound impact on every part of their lives, and this government seems to just soldier on without any apparent effect on them at all.
Well, we even heard late yesterday, I think it was, that Arno's Tyres had, I believe that they've closed their doors. After, I think it was 30 years. I would have to double check that, or if anybody's out there listening that is able to tell us, 8941 1049, or send us a text message 0418 957 369. But yeah, look, I think that the seriousness of this sort of can't be underplayed. And Robin, you do make a good point. And I know that your family has got businesses, and it's a tough juggle for people at the moment.
And it is definitely businesses, but there's a lot of people who don't even own a business who are doing it really tough. Mm. People who own property. There was an auction held on Wednesday night, Katie. Eight properties went to auction, and seven of the eight were mortgagee in possession.
Yeah.
And I think that I think things with the property market are probably a lot worse than we even realise they are, and we're just starting to see that now with a lot of these mortgagee in possession properties come on board.
I have been told this by a couple of real estate agents that we have got a situation in the Territory at the moment where there is a lot more of that happening, and I think it is really sad, and it's a really tough juggle, I've got to say, even in a job like the media, in my job, where you think we've gotten to a point now where, you know, you do have those real concerns with the economy, and you do have those real concerns with the way that people are struggling at the moment, but we don't want to get to the point where we're talking the Territory down too much and people lose confidence. But I think that it's important that the story is told.
And that's why, Katie, it's so important the decisions are made to support local business, to support keeping people here, to support jobs here. So I think that the capital infrastructure grants, it's, you know, a huge number of jobs that those projects have been designed to support keeping people in the Territory, to support local businesses, but also to ensure that we get long-term community infrastructure from that.
But ongoing, reckless, irresponsible spending by this government, sending us deeper, literally deeper and deeper into debt every day, is just so on the nose, you wouldn't believe. People just will not tolerate that.
It is the week that was. Robin Lamley, Matt Cunningham, Natasha Files and Leah Finocchiaro in the studio with me. We have got a message here. It says, OK, the CLP may have dropped the ball post-IMPEX, but Labor had 3 years to rectify that. Cop out, Labor. There's one here from Russell. It says, morning, what about the $10 million to that water company? Yeah. Did we get that back? There is another one here. I've been here for 35 years. My kids are Territorians. My partner and I are leaving in the new year. I have to sell my house. That's the next hurdle. I don't feel safe anymore. Good on Robin and Leah for telling it as it is. So look, there's just a few of the messages that come through. We get a lot of text messages during this show, which is good because it lets us know what people are thinking. But look, I do want to talk about Parliament during the week, and I know that it was an interesting week. And there was a focus on crime. Robin, we of course caught up with you a little bit earlier in the week. You were hoping to be able to speak about a youth curfew for Alice.
We didn't get to it, but it will be first on the general business agenda for the November sittings.
Yep.
Wednesday, the 29th of November at 3 p.m. Tune in. We're going to have 4 hours of stimulating debate on a youth curfew.
Well, I may be the only member of the public that listens, but you know I'll listen.
Robin, didn't you put it in your newsletter that curfews don't work some time ago?
I don't think so, Natasha. I've been an advocate of youth curfews for years. But there's arguments for and against, and I acknowledge that.
Leah, I know that the CLP really, you did listen to what people were saying to you and basically focused on crime, censuring the government earlier in the week. Were you satisfied with the response? Because I know that you guys have been asking for some questions to be answered for some time now.
That's right. We had a lot of questions put into the Minister for Police and the Minister for Territory Families, trying to unpack what diversion is, what it's looking like, what the process is when a young person's arrested, all of that type of stuff, because it's a big question that Territorians have been asking us. You know, people don't understand what is going on, what the process is, and what the consequences really are. And of course, we hear the government talk about consequences all the time, but people certainly don't feel like that is actually what's happening. So we asked a lot of questions, we still, you know, some 60 plus days we haven't heard from the Territory Families Minister yet. We did receive the ones back from the police minister. This week we censured the government on crime because it is a huge issue for Territorians. And as your listener just texted in, you know, it's becoming a decision where people are on that tipping point of do we stay, do we go, and crime is pushing them over the edge and they're leaving. And we just can't afford to lose any more Territorians. We need everyone to feel safe. We don't want any more victims. And so we need to really seriously look at how the entire justice system is working. So we put that to government this week, and the participation was very low. I think we had two speakers on the government side, and one of them wasn't the Territory Families Minister, whose portfolio this area is in, which is shocking.
We have got, I have had a read of the latest police annual report, and it does give us a bit more of an up-to-date snapshot, I guess you'd call it, of youth diversion, because there's been heaps of questions about youth diversion and how many kids are being diverted and whether it works or not. For 2018-19, there was a total of 2,039 youth diversion considerations. These considerations were made in relation to 1,124 individual youths. And then of these, there were 720 diversion activities, so those youth justice conferences and verbal and written warnings and drug diversions, and 137 considerations that were either being dealt with by diversion but had not been finalised or were pending assessment or referral to the court. 586 individual youths were diverted in 2018-19, and a further 73 youths remain under consideration. We've then got 465 were not eligible for diversion and were referred to the court. Look, there is a lot more detail there. We know that a total of 281 youth justice conferences were conveyed, 233 individual youths attended at least one youth justice conference, and the following occurred. They either did not reoffend after the conference, 172 didn't reoffend after those conferences. We've got 61 reoffended after the conference, and then we've got of that 61 that reoffended, there was 40 that only reoffended once, 11 that reoffended twice, and 10 that reoffended more than twice. So look, there's some of those details. I know there's been so much discussion over the last couple of weeks about those diversion rates, what happens, what the consequences are for youths breaking the law and doing the wrong thing. There's been a lot of discussion about the crime statistics as well. What I found really quite fascinating, I've got to say, over the last couple of weeks is that even with those statistics, there's a lot of Territorians that are at the point even where they're saying they don't believe them.
Yeah, I think people have had enough, and you know, there's a lack of trust out there amongst the community with the messages that are coming from government. I mean, we've seen them, and opposition leader Gary Higgins has been very strong on this week around this cherry picking of the statistics that the police minister and the chief minister are choosing to come out with. They're comparing the figures from now to all different points in time, presumably to suit their political narrative. What people want is to feel safe at home. They want to stop changing their behaviour because of the crime that's happening. I mean, we saw a cafe in Palmerston change its operating hours. People were constantly telling me that they've changed their behaviour and the way they go about their business, the way they do things at night time. You know, so it's having this genuine impact. And, you know, Robin mentioned earlier, business people were laying awake at night wondering how they're going to get through this economic time. There's absolutely that. And then there's this whole other group of people, and a lot of them are business people as well, who are sleeping in their businesses and not sleeping well at night because they're worried that they're going to be next. And that's a terrible feeling for the community to have.
I think in this whole argument, though, like if people feel that the wrong direction's been taken on the way we're dealing with youth justice and youth crime. I mean, there's all of this sort of screaming at the moment, Gunner, it's all his fault. The CLP has to take a large share of the responsibility. Adam Giles, the CLP Chief Minister, called for the Royal Commission. Malcolm Turnbull, who was the Liberal Prime Minister at the time, announced that Royal Commission within 10 hours of a television show that most Territorians now think was a total hatchet job going to air. And now the government's been lumped with the recommendations of this Royal Commission, and it's damned if it doesn't, damned if it doesn't. When it does something that's in line with the Royal Commission, it gets smashed by the right side of politics. When it does something that's against the recommendations of the Royal Commission, every lefty lawyer and activist comes out and, you know, says that they're the devil as well. What's the government supposed to do?
And Katie, I think it's really important. When people will say, you know, it's cherry-picking statistics, these are police statistics. So is that an accusation that the police aren't entering
data correctly? This is a rubbish argument that government are running, and I want to put it firmly on the record that we support police 110%. We are not questioning the validity of the statistics. What we're saying is it's very cute of government to pick a timeline that suits their narrative. Why not compare all of the crimes to the same year? For example, if you want to compare this year to last year, do that. If you want to compare this year to 2 years ago, 3 years ago, five, but don't pick a different crime with a different year. That's what we're saying. I want that firmly on the record that this narrative government's trying to run about us not believing police is absolute garbage. It's not credible and it's offensive.
So, Katie, these are statistics. Police say that the 10-year average is still 10% below, in, for example, in Darwin and Palmerston.
58% above in Alice Springs.
But that's, again, just cherry-picking a statistic.
No,
but
it's Katie, not. That is an absolute fact.
We acknowledge we're part of these communities. Like, it's, you know, Leah sits here and you know, we visit these businesses. We live in our communities, drop our children to school. We're a part of our communities as well. And we hear the frustrations of Territorians, and that's why we're putting in place a range of measures. We're not leaving things. We're not cutting the funding to youth services, which is what you saw under the CLP, because it's easy to cut because you don't see the impact straight away. You see that down the chain. There's not one measure that will solve these issues. Giving the police the resources they need to do their jobs, both in numbers but also in resources, we're making sure that's happening. But this is complex. There's not one solution that will solve these issues.
Well, someone has just messaged through and said not everyone reports crime, and I think that that is a point worth making. I think the other point worth making is it's, like I said right at the start, is we're in this really strange situation right now where even with statistics, even with these diversion rates being read out, even with people knowing how many youths are sort of being sent to court or doing diversion programs, the community's still feeling really sort of upset.
Traumatised.
Yeah. And to be honest, you know, the only other time that I've had people so angry calling the radio station about a topic was when Pete Davies was in this chair and we were talking about petrol. It's kind of like it's sort of become that real, you know, they really sort of feel like they're being let down in some way. And I just think that we all need to make note of that. And I know that I've said it on a number of occasions, but I think that everybody just needs to be really aware of how some people in the community are feeling at the moment, because it's tough for them.
Katie, what I'm saying is we hear that. We're a part of the communities. It's not just listening to shows such as yours. We hear this in our communities during the day, but that's why we're putting, you know, back in place school-based constables, which the CLP scrapped. It's so many measures, and we certainly are empathetic to all Territorians who are victims of crime, and we want to stop crime before it happens.
It's the week that was, and a star-studded lineup, you'd have to say, this morning. Robin Lamley, Matt Cunningham, Natasha Files, and Leah Finocchiaro, and it's getting interesting when it comes to politics. Some of the pre-selections, some
thought
of the
it
names.
It's always interesting.
Oh, you know, it's always interesting if you're a nerd like me that listens to Question Time in the afternoons. But I don't know if everybody is that interested in politics.
I love it when you're door knocking and you find people at home. They're obviously not watching our Question Time because I should be in there, but they watch the House of Reps Question Time.
Yep. And you think, oh, yes. Well, look, it's certainly, things are heating up, I guess, as you start to hear some of the names, some of the people that have decided to go for pre-selection. That kicked off really earlier this week when former Cattlemen's Association president or head, Tracy Hayes, had put her hand up and said that she's going to run for the CLP. You'd have to say quite a massive coup for for the CLP, and I do wonder whether it will encourage other Territorians to put their hand up.
We're really excited, obviously, going into next election, and the fact that Tracy Hayes, such a well-respected, articulate, exceptional woman, has decided to run for the CLP is really significant going forward. And, if you are a conservative-minded person who wants to contribute to the growth and future of the Territory, then please come and run for us. You know, the remainder of the seats are open now. You can contact the party for all the details, but we've got our first tranche of candidates who've been announced. They've already hit the ground running. They're a solid team with diverse backgrounds, and it's really important going forward that that Territorians see that commitment from the people who've put their hand up to serve the community.
I know today the Labor Party's got Mark Monaghan, I believe is the name. If I have got that wrong, I will read that in the paper. He's been pre-selected for, what's going to be an interesting seat, I guess, Fong Lim. So it's actually my electorate where I live, so I'll be interested to see who does put their hand
up. You can fill us in each Friday, Wolfie.
Yeah, that's it.
People are door knocking on us.
Hey?
No, God, no. Don't start that rumour. Jeez. There's no way. I'm sorry, but there's no way I'm doing that.
Mark's got a strong background in business, engineering and education, so it's exciting that he's been chosen by the party so the people of Fong Lim can have a strong representation in the parliament.
Be interesting to see who the CLP has in that seat too, Leah.
It will be, and I expect there's a lot of...
Because Leah would lose her Friday gig.
Here we go.
Look, if you're interested in Fong Lim, then go for it. Put your nomination in. You know, we're really pumped going into the next election, and Territorians need people who are committed to our community, committed to growing the Territory, diversifying our economy and dealing with this crime issue. And so if you think you can contribute to that, put your nomination in.
In all seriousness, do you reckon that the public would accept Dave Tollner coming back into politics? I know that there was all of the anger about the Giles Tollner era.
Yeah.
The only reason I say, he wrote a piece for the NT News earlier this year about the economy and whatever, and there were just reams and reams of comments singing his praises. I just wonder whether there's given the way that the people feel about the way things are going with the economy and everything else, whether Territorians might actually accept the return of Dave Tollner, which probably would have been somewhat unthinkable three years ago.
Well, I don't know. I guess only time will tell. Well, yeah, we'll ask our listeners.
Bring back Dave.
8941 1049. Send us a text, 0418 957 369. But look, we might be hearing a bit more from Dave Tollner on my radio show. We'll wait and find out. I'll let you know.
Are you ditching us, Wolfie?
No, not you guys.
We thought it was just Leah's job that was up for grabs.
Oh, dear.
But, Robin, look, I want to talk about Alice Springs as well, because you're going to have a bit of a tough battle on your hands.
Yeah, I am.
The Mayor, Damien Ryan, has put his hand up.
Yeah, look, generally speaking, I think it's great to see skilled, experienced, committed Territorians putting their hand up for Parliament. I believe in a strong democracy, and I don't think we've had that over the last 3 years. So I think it's fantastic. And, including Damien, if Damien wants to run against me, the Mayor of Alice Springs, then, that could only be a good thing for democracy. At the end of the day, it's the people that decide. It's not us. We pretend to be the experts and we think we can manipulate situations to some extent. I know the political parties do, but let's have a really tough competition everywhere and get the best person for the job. And if you win, you win. If you lose, you lose. That's life. You move on.
I think
stack shelves at Woolies or something.
Well, hey, and there's nothing wrong with that, is there? And Robin, I think that's a great way of actually thinking of it. It's very different, but I think you've got to see it as a bit of a sport. I'm not saying that it's in any way detracting from politics in any way, shape or form, but I think you've got to see it a little bit like that. You've got an opposition, or you've got the person that's going up against you. The aim is for everybody to do the best possible job that they can for Territorians. And like you said, we all perform much better when you've got good competition. So, it's going to be an interesting one. There's no doubt about it. But look, we might take a very short break. It is just 13 minutes away from 10 o'clock. Unless, do you have someone else you want to talk about there, Matt? You've got time, mate. Don't worry.
I feel like I'm part of some social experiment this morning. You know, outnumbered. They haven't given me a microphone. I feel like they're trying to say, you know, this is how we women usually feel. But no, I was just going to say that I think it's ridiculous what the CLP's done in Alice Springs run Damien Ryan against Robin. I mean, my understanding is that Robin was willing to come back into the CLP, that there are some people down there who don't like her for whatever reason, and that's why she's not back in. And now they're running their best candidate against her. I mean, Robin's never going to support a Labor government as a Conservative independent. Why on earth are they wasting their best candidate running against Robin in Araluen? I just think it's ridiculous.
They don't like me, Matt.
Do you know, sometimes...
Which I kind of wear as a badge of honour in some ways, because it means that I'm getting up people's noses and hopefully doing my job.
I know how that feels, Robin. Matt and I both do. We've got our hands out this morning. Matt, we know how that feels, eh, mate?
It's not a popularity
It's a lonely world we live in, Katie. Lonely, lonely.
Yeah, right. But, you know, hey, we cop it on the chin.
Yeah, you
but
do.
But, look, I actually think that it's going to be interesting, but I think it's a bit petty sometimes when you do see this type of thing happen within political parties, and people need to look a little bit broader than that and sort of go, all right, well, our personalities might be different, or we might have some views that are different, but if this person's going to fight incredibly hard for the territory, well, can't that only be a good thing?
Unfortunately, some people don't have that level of maturity, emotional maturity. It's all about them and, you know, something that happened 5 years ago that upset them. You know, we all can share stories like that in politics, can't we?
Yeah, no doubt. Man, everyone's just sitting back nodding for the listeners that can't see us. We will take a very short break, unless, Matt, you've got something else that you'd like to say. We don't want to feel like you're being left out.
We'll just check in with Matt every couple of
weeks. We're taking a very short break.
It is just on 11 minutes away from 10 o'clock.
360 with Katie Wolf. Email 360@mix1049.com.au. Phone 8941 1049.
It is 7 minutes away from 10 o'clock. It's the week that was. Robin Lamley, Matt Cunningham, Natasha Files and Leah Finocchiaro in the studio with me. Matt Cunningham feeling a little bit over, underrepresented, I should say, because we're all women and one bloke. Matt, you've got a microphone. You've just come back from Central Australia, doing quite an extensive report on Uluru, actually. How'd it go?
It was really interesting, actually, Wolfie. Thanks for the opportunity to speak this morning.
Make it quick.
And what happened was that I would say one thing, right, and then like 20 minutes later the woman would say it, and then they'd all be going, what a great idea.
You're out. You're going to get belted. No, that is obviously an inappropriate comment to make. I was being silly.
Yeah, yes, you'll be dumped as a white ribbon ambassador.
Yes, I will. I apologise.
Yeah. No, in all seriousness, Uluru was quite remarkable. We were there for what was the last 2 days of the Southern school holidays. So the Thursday and Friday before school holidays went back down south. There was still another week to go here. But there was... we got there on the Thursday at about lunchtime, and the rock climb had already closed because it was too hot. They were closing at 8 o'clock every morning. So we got there the next morning at 6 a.m., and there must have been 1,000 people queued up waiting to climb.
This is wild. I saw some photos of people sort of trying to get up the rock. And I always see Central Australia as being quite a spiritual place. So then when you've got that situation where you've got that many people trying to get up there at once, it distracts from what you're there for.
There was quite a contrast, because the night before we'd been, you know, at the sunset viewing area, and it's quite incredible to watch the sun go down on Uluru, and then the next morning to be out there and just to be absolute chaos as people were just desperate to get up there before the rock climb closes. I found it really interesting speaking to different people, though, about the issue, because I spoke to one guy, his name's David Hewitt, and he spent 10 years working with people at the community of Docker River and other Aboriginal communities around Uluru. In fact, in 1972, he led a group of 15 Aboriginal men who built the first store at what is now the community of Mutajulu. And he was really interesting because he said there were people climbing it then, both white fellas and black fellas, and that there was no real issue with it. And he was basically saying it's white bureaucrats who are really driving this. But of course, you know, then I also spoke to Joe Martin Jard from the Central Land Council, who said that the traditional owners have for a long time wanted to see the rock climb closed.
Yep.
And he made some really good points too. I think the point about safety is a really good one. I mean, just this week we saw a 12-year-old girl fall off Uluru and suffer some pretty nasty injuries. We've seen people die climbing Uluru. So, you know, it's the issue that's got the country talking, really. And, you know, there's only a week to go now until it'll be closed forever.
Yep. And, look, I think that's the interesting part of it, is it does have the country talking, but it's going ahead, it's happening, and we've only, you know, there is only that week to go. But I found it really fascinating to see how many people have just turned up to sort of to try and climb the rock ahead of that closure.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the numbers are like after the rock climb closes.
Yeah.
I think Parks Australia was saying to me that their numbers are up about 30% this year. It was madness in Yulara. I mean, just to get something to eat, you know, was a challenge.
Yeah.
It was full on. So it will be interesting to see whether those numbers drop off. Hopefully, I think the expectation is they'll return to the levels of maybe a year or two ago before the climb closure was announced.
Yeah, look, but I still think we'll have heaps of people visit. I can't see that it's not going to still be a really popular place to visit. But
and the one thing I would say, I mean, I'll be preaching to the converted with your audience, but we were certainly saying this on Sky News last night, is to people who are thinking of travelling to Uluru, you know, a lot of the flights go directly now from Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane, even Darwin to Uluru.
Straight.
I go to Alice Springs. Alice Springs is amazing. There are so many really cool and interesting things to see and do in Alice Springs. And I think we need to do more here to sell Alice Springs as a tourist
destination. Yeah, I love Alice Springs.
Centre of the universe.
Yeah. It is a good place. And you know what? The thing I love about Alice Springs is the people as well. It's a real regional place. And I love those types of towns
and
where
Paul
you get that
Murray's
real sense of community.
Paul Murray's show last night, broadcast out of Alice Springs and the quarry just up the road from my place was great. He really showcased the best parts of Alice Springs, I think.
It looked absolutely amazing. And,
it's a good thing. Well, that's exactly what we want, isn't it? Get people visiting the Northern Territory.
Yeah,
the more the merrier.
Paul Murray.
Well, Robin Lamley, we're going to have to wrap it up.
Yes.
Good to catch up with you. Thank
always
you so much for joining us this morning.
Come along and chat with you, Katie.
Yeah,
thanks
good
for
to
having
have
me.
You on the show. Matt Cunningham, thank you so much for joining us. And I apologise for making that very inappropriate joke towards you and to any of our listeners who might have been offended as well.
I am offended, Katie. If you'd let me speak earlier in the show, Katie, I would
there
let
we can
you
show.
Sorry, Matt, time's up. We're going to go to the news.
I would have let your listeners know that you've been nominated for two awards.
Thanks.
At the, what is it called?
The Radio Awards. Best Talk Presenter.
And
the Brian White Award for Radio Journalism.
Well. Thank you. Yeah. Well, do you know the really nice thing, the Talk Award, it is actually just all of my wonderful listeners. So I think that's the really wonderful thing is that it is just Territorians.
Very modest, Katie.
Well, good luck.
Thank you. That's a bit embarrassing. I'm embarrassed.
Aww.
Natasha Files, thank you for joining
do you
us
me
this
to
morning.
Talk now
yes.
and save you all
here. Now Matt can't talk.
She's a slight shade of pink.
I've taken the mic off Matt, so before he embarrasses Wolfie. Thanks for having me. It's great to be back.
Thanks, Filesy. And Leah Finocchiaro, of course, the Deputy Opposition Leader, thank you.
Thank you very much and good luck, Katie.
That was The Week That Was on Mix 104.9.